things as well. We've always known that. We have seen it happen ourselves. We've seen people that we thought would never straighten up and do right turn around and change their lives, be changed so much that their own kinfolk hardly recognize them anymore. But this particular section of Scripture, Mark chapter 5, verses 1 through 20, describes an event like that taking place in Bible time. I'm going to read the section, and then we'll go back and examine some of those details. And they came over unto the other side of the sea, into the country of Gadarene. And when he was come out of the ship, immediately there met him out of the tomb a man with an unclean spirit, who had his dwelling among the tomb. And no man could find him, no, not with chains, because that he had been often bound with fetters and chains, and the chains had been plucked asunder by him, and the fetters broken in pieces. Neither could any man tame him. And always night and day he was in the mountains and in the tombs, crying and cutting himself with stones. But when he saw Jesus afar off, he ran and worshipped him, and cried with a loud voice and said, What have I to do with thee, Jesus, thou Son of the Most High God? I adjure thee, by God, that thou torment me not. For he said unto him, Come out of the man, thou unclean spirit. And he asked him, What is thy name? And he answered, saying, My name is Legion, for we are many. And he besought him that he would not send them away out of the country. Now there was there, nigh unto the mountains, a great herd of swine feeding. And all the devils besought him, saying, Send us into the swine, that we may enter into them. And forthwith Jesus gave them leave. And the unclean spirit went out and entered into the swine, and the herd ran violently down a steep place into the sea. There were about 2,000, and were choked in the sea. And they that fed the swine fled and told it in the city and in the country. And they went out to see what it was that was done. And they come to Jesus and see that him that was possessed with the devil and had the legion sitting and clothed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. And they that saw it told them how it befell to him that was possessed with the devil, and also concerning the swine. And they began to pray him to depart out of their coast. And when he was come into the ship, he that had been possessed with the devil prayed him that he might be with him. Howbeit Jesus suffered him not, but saith unto him, Go home to thy friends, and tell them how great things the Lord hath done for thee, and hath had compassion on thee. And he departed and began to publish in Decapolis how great things Jesus had done for him, and all men did marvel. Who was this guy? Mark 5, 1 through 5, we are introduced to this wild man, this monster, really. He was possessed, verse 2 tells us. He was homeless and friendless. Nobody could tame him. Nobody wanted him around. He didn't have a home. He lived among the tombs. Lived in the graveyard. And he was a danger to himself and to others. They tried to bind him with chains because he was such a dangerous individual. They didn't want somebody to be hurt by him, but that didn't work. He broke the chain. And he was cutting himself with stones. He was a danger to himself as well. So here we have this man, this monster, so far from what people would consider normal that everyone around was afraid to go into that area because of him. They had tried to chain him up, to keep him out of the way. And some apparently had tried to tame him, and that didn't work either, to try to calm him down in some way. But when Jesus shows up, he automatically begins a change. Even before the demons are cast out of him, notice that even while he had the demons themselves that controlled him behaved differently when Jesus was around. Even the demons behaved differently. They came and fell down and worshipped him. They brought that man to Jesus' feet. That wasn't a normal behavior. He wasn't normally the kind of person that anyone could be approached by, or that he could approach anyone. But imagine, you know, there's said that, the legion of demons that was in the man comes and he says to it, it brings him to speak to Jesus and says, Lord, Son of the Most High God, even the demons knew who Jesus was. Pharisees denied it, but the demons knew who it was. Jesus, thou Son of the Most High God, don't torment us before the time. Again, the account of Matthew tells them. They know there's a time coming when they're going to be tormented, but they know the time hasn't arrived. They don't torment us before the time. And so they come to it, and they beg him not to cast them out into, you know, Jesus had the power to cast them out and into a place where they cannot bother anybody else ever again. But they begged him not to do that. And there were some pigs nearby, and they begged him, Lord, send us the end of those pigs. Well, what did Jesus do for this man? What did Jesus do for him? Mark 5, 6 through 13. First of all, we see that Jesus spoke to him. Now, that's something that probably was uncommon in this man's experience. Jesus spoke to him. I'm sure people had talked about this man a lot of times. I'm sure his friends and family dreaded walking the street to hear somebody say something about that crazy old naked man that lives out in the zoo. And no, that's my husband, my father, my brother. Who knows what it might have been? We don't know all of his relations, but to know that man used to be my friend, and now hear how he talks about him because of the way that he is now. But Jesus didn't talk about him. Jesus talked to him. Verse 9 tells us. Jesus spoke to him, and he asked him, what's your name? And now, notice this. The man doesn't even give Jesus his name. The demons have overpowered this man to such a degree that he doesn't speak. The demons speak for him.
We're legion because we're many.
Can you imagine a demon voice coming out of this guy? And so here we have this guy. And Jesus speaks it. And that doesn't take Jesus back at all. He's not afraid of this. Not afraid of the demons that are in this man. Most people would be. I probably would be. You probably would be. We had this guy came up to us. But Jesus isn't afraid. So then we see that Jesus repossessed him. This man had been possessed by the demon. Unlawfully, so to speak. Jesus repossessed him. Reclaimed him for his rightful owner. That's the way it is with all of us when we go off into sin and we're possessed by the devil. Not in the sense that this man was, but when we become slaves to sin, we're possessed. The devil owns us. That's what possession is. It's ownership. And when we possess our car, or we possess a TV, or a house, or any number of other things that we may possess, something we own. But now, if you hadn't made the payments on something like that, if you're still making payments to the bank still owns it. And you may have possession of it, but you don't own it yet. If you don't make those payments, the bank may come and repossess it. We've got to remember that God made mankind. We are His. Even those who are not His children by faith are still His children by creation. He created them. He made them. And this man had been a child of God at one time. But the devil had possessed him. Jesus repossessed him. Jesus reclaimed him. Took him back. Took him away from the devil. Snatched him out of the arms of those demons. We see that in verses 8 and 10 through 13. And then we also see that Jesus befriended him and sent him home. Verses 15 and verses 18 through 19. We see in verse 15 that when the people came out, they saw Jesus, and they saw the man that was possessed with the devil sitting right there with Jesus. He had a new friend. Well, you know, if you had been possessed by a legion of demons, and a legion is a whole bunch, about 12,000. That's a bunch of demons. Now, I don't know if there were actually 12,000, but there were a bunch of them. If you'd been possessed by a bunch of demons and somebody came and kicked them out of you, well, he'd be your friend right quick, wouldn't he? Well, Jesus befriended this man. But then the man wanted
You imagine?
Then they start to, everybody wants, oh, get out of here, go, go, get out, we're scared of you.
And the man wants to go home with Jesus.
He climbs in the boat. Imagine one of the apostles counting dead.
Okay, we got one Jesus here, and we got one, two, three, four, five.
Well, wait, 13. We're not supposed to have 13 besides Jesus. Somebody's in the boat that's not supposed to be. And he just said, Lord, somebody else is in the boat. And the man's begging you, can I go with you? Can I go? I want to go. I don't want to stay.
I mean, can you imagine how embarrassing it would be?
If you had been running around naked in a graveyard for however many years this fellow had been doing this, you might want to move to a different town. Like, well, this fellow wanted to leave. He wanted to go somewhere where he could get away from his reputation. But Jesus said, oh no. He said, no, you go home.
That's probably an idea that this man hadn't thought about in a long time.
The idea of having a home. The idea of having friends and maybe family members that cared about.
Probably hadn't thought about that in a long time.
But that's what Jesus started to say, go home. And there were reasons for that. We'll see those in a minute. Then say, how did he change? Mark 5, verses 14 through 17, we see how this man changed. The people who had been feeding the pig, you gotta wonder about these guys. I'm sure it doesn't take a doctor's degree to feed pigs. The prodigal son, after he ran away from home, probably had never had a job in his life, but he got a job eating pigs. It's not real strenuous work. I mean, you know, pigs, you watch the pigs. When they throw them a bucket of something, they'll eat near about anything. So you just throw them a bucket of something and let them eat on it. What skill is there involved in that? Not much. But here are these guys. They're sitting here watching these pigs. All 2,000 of them. Pretty easy job, laying around, sitting around, just talking and having a good time because he's a pig. And then all of a sudden, all 2,000 of those pigs go running off to the edge of the mountainside and jump out. And now you go back to your boss and complain. What do you say? We were watching the pigs, you know, like we do every day, and they were doing like they do every day, and then all of a sudden, they all started running off, and we tried to catch them all, but, you know, there's only two of us, and there was 2,000 of them, and we couldn't get a hold of one, and they all ran off to the sea and they drowned. And the employer was probably pretty upset, but then they started saying, but wait, it wasn't our fault. There was this guy, you see, you know Crazy Harry that lives out there in the tombs, you know him? This guy came up and healed him. That's who it was. It wasn't that guy did something to those pigs. Always blame the stranger, see. Always blame the stranger. And so they planned and people started to let's go see about this. I mean, you know, we live in a small town. If there was a lake or maybe over in the river and we heard there was 2,000 pigs drowned and flooded in the river, it might be something worth going to see. So when we were in Texas, we went out to see a place in a man's field where the ground just caved in. That was the thing. Boy, there were cars parked everywhere walking out to see this big hole in the ground. Just wanted to see where there's a big sinkhole. Oh, that was excitement in that little town. Well, when you live in a small town, things like that can be pretty exciting. Well, imagine 2,000 pigs ran off the mountainside. Drowned in the sea. Let's go check that out. So everybody from town, they start getting out there to see what's going on. And when they get out there, they see a different fellow than they had seen. This man that they had considered a monster, that they had tried to chain up, that they had tried to forget about, tried to ignore, couldn't help it. Can you imagine in the middle of the night, this guy is crying out, screaming out. And people all over, you know, are hearing this guy screaming or howling at the moon or whatever it was he was doing. You know, it says that he would cry and he'd cut himself with stones. He was screaming and he was, you know. But what a man.
life. You can't tie him up. You can't do anything with this guy. And so when they show up and they see Jesus,
and you just see the, you know, the pig herders going,
that's the guy. He's the one. He did it.
Right there.
And they see Jesus sitting there, and they see this guy that, is that the same guy? I mean, he's sitting down. Apparently that was something unusual. Maybe they'd never seen this guy sit down before. He's sitting. And he's got clothes on. Now that's certainly an improvement. He's clothed now. Good. But he's tall and collected. He's in his right mind. And you imagine he's just sitting there talking with Jesus and saying, thank you so much for doing this. And you just imagine the change. And the people see this guy. Well, what would their reaction be? I saw that verse 15. He was tall, he was clothed, he was collected. He's sitting there. Well, if you knew somebody who had this kind of personality, maybe not somebody who was possessed, but we know people who were just so high, strong, and violent, and if we saw them just sitting and calm, and something different about this person, something's changed, what would our reaction be? What do you think we would, you know, whoever did this, well, that was good that they did this. And you think that if Jesus healed him, he made this guy this way. Good! But that wasn't their reaction. See, he was so different that it was scary. Verse 17 says, when they saw him sitting and clothed and in his right mind, they were afraid. These folks seem backwards to me. I don't know about you, but I would think the fear would be him running around wild with all these demons in him. I would think it would be a great relief to see him sitting and clothed and in his right mind. But not these two folks. No, no. They see this situation and it makes them afraid. I don't know why it made them afraid, but it did. It made them so afraid that they begin immediately to ask Jesus to get out of town. Go away. Go somewhere else. We don't want your kind around here. That seems a little backwards too, then. I guess they had become so used to having this guy around. They were so used to, you know, they just couldn't handle the idea of it being different. They just couldn't handle him not being like he was before. Or who knows, maybe some of them had abused or mistreated some of his friends and family members, or maybe taken some of his property or some of it. And so maybe they were afraid that there was going to be retribution now because he was sane again. Because he was back in his right mind. Maybe they were afraid of that. I don't know what made them afraid, but it doesn't seem to be a very sensible reaction. Perhaps they were just afraid because Jesus was powerful enough to turn this wild man into a normal human being again. Maybe they were just afraid of Jesus' power. Maybe that's what it was. The Bible doesn't tell us why they were afraid. It just says that they were afraid when they saw this change in the man's status. Oh, how he did change. He changed dramatically. We see that all through verses 14 through 17. But then when I ask the question, well, what did he do for Jesus? We've already seen what Jesus did for him. Jesus cast those demons out. Jesus befriended him, spoke to him like a human being. Even though he was acting like a monster, Jesus still spoke to him like a man. Well, what did he do for Jesus? Chapter 5, verses 18 through 20. He became a missionary for Jesus. He became a minister. Ministering the Word of God. Verses 19 and 20, notice it says, Jesus wouldn't let him go with him, but he said, go home to thy friend and tell how great things the Lord has done for you, and has had compassion on you. And he departed and began to publish in the Decapolis how great things Jesus had done for him, and all men did marvel. So Jesus said, I'll tell you what, you go tell everybody about me. Tell them what I did for you. He became a missionary. something. You know me? I used to be that guy that was running around naked, screaming and hollering, cutting myself, breaking chains out there in the graveyard. And look what Jesus did for me. Look at me now. Jesus did this. Isn't he great? Isn't he wonderful? Isn't it amazing what God can do for you? And here's this guy, and he begins to, he's telling it all over Decapolis. Decapolis was an area, Decapolis literally means 10 cities. So there was a 10 city area there where the cities were fairly close together. And he went over that whole area and started and just telling them all. Telling them all in that whole area about what had happened. And then, also, he exemplified God's power and compassion. Everyone who saw him and who knew what he had been before saw an example of the power that God had and the compassion that God had. Everybody that saw him saw this. Now what about us today? We want to look at this from two sides. One, we know as Christians we need to be like Jesus. We need to love the unlovable. We need to befriend the friendless. We need to speak and talk to those that nobody else will talk to. The outcast. The one who everybody else ignores. Those are the ones we need to reach out to. Jesus wasn't afraid to talk to this man. Jesus wasn't afraid to be this man's friend. Jesus wasn't afraid to help this man in the way that he could, miraculously. Now we can't do the miracles that Jesus could do, but sometimes all people need is a friend. Sometimes all they need is somebody to be able to talk to, somebody to treat them with respect as another human being instead of treating them like dirt, trash, and garbage. Jesus changed lives not just with his miracles, but by the way he interacted with people, the way he treated people. The way he showed them that he cared. It's part of that compassion. And then also, we need to show not just the compassion of God as Christians, but we need to show the power of God. We need to show people, like this man did, go and tell people what the Lord has done for us. Sometimes we shout, talk about testifying. Like that. Go tell what the Lord's done for you. You know, we can tell people sometimes all of the scriptural reasons for not using instrumental music and for assembling on the first day of the week and taking the Lord's Supper every first day of the week. And we can do all of those things until we're blue in the face. But what really gets to people is when they see that it's made an impact in our lives. That we're different. That we're changed. We're not the same person we used to be. And when they see that, they begin to think differently. Maybe there's something to this. If it can change him, if it can change her, then maybe there's something to it. Maybe it can help me too. We need to show the compassion God has had for us and the power that he had to change our lives. And let that be an example to others that it can work for you too. You too can have your life changed. You know, if Jesus can change a man who was overpowered by a legion of demons, then he can change you if you're willing. Now, he's not going to change you against your will. He's not going to make you different. You see, that's the way the devil works, to possess people and make them do things they didn't even want to do. That was the devil's way. That's not the way Jesus works. Jesus is never going to change you against your will. Now, he may punish you against your will if you refuse him, but he's never going to make you do anything until the end of time. Got our sign out there that God won't make you go to heaven. He won't make you go to church. He won't make you do anything except for one thing. If you disobey him all your life, he will make you go to hell. You can't live your life all the while and then say, oh, but Lord, I don't want to go to hell now. Once you get to judgment, it's too late then. Let Jesus change you now. And let him use use you to bring others to Him. We can see how it works. We've seen how it works. We see it as we look around at ourselves this morning. We see people that perhaps, I never would have thought that they would have obeyed the gospel, but they did. And we see people that we thought, you know, look, after they obeyed the gospel, they went and told their friends or their family members or somebody that they worked with or somebody that they knew, and that person came to Jesus as a result of it. That's the way it works. Jesus sent this man out. He said, go tell what great things the Lord has done for you. Go tell it. Don't be afraid of it. Just because the denominations use the term testifying and witnessing and all those things, that doesn't mean we can't tell the truth. Tell what God's done for you. Now, that's not the only thing. I mean, we can't just go out, well, the Lord changed my life. He changed your life too. You want to change your life? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't like the way Jesus calls me. I want to change my life. All right, He will. Because it works that way. We then, once they get to that point where they want to change their life, and they see that our life is changed, we tell them, then they're open to receive what the Bible says they need to do in order to get in terms with God so that He will change their lives. That's the problem that people have sometimes is they just go out, oh, you want to believe in Jesus? Oh, yeah, I believe in Jesus. All right, then that's great. You're a Christian now. No. No. You may be a believer, but you're not a Christian yet. Now that you believe, you're going to have to act on that and get a little more knowledge and act on that to become a Christian. And even then, it's still going to be an uphill battle. It's still going to be a struggle. Even though Jesus can change you, you have to continue to be willing for Him to change you. Sometimes that's the hard part. Sometimes we want Him to change us a little bit, but there are parts of our lives that we don't want Him to change. To this man, his life was so bad that he wanted Jesus to change everything about him. And Jesus did that. Jesus sent those demons packing. And when he did that, this man was so grateful to Jesus that he went through 10 different cities telling what all the Lord had done for him. And about the compassion that God had had on him to Jesus. And you wonder, if Jesus could have gone back to that town a few years later, and maybe the people in that area would have received him a little differently because of this man. I know the folks that owned those pigs were probably mad at Jesus because he cost them a lot of money. All those pigs. But you know, that teaches us something else. The spiritual and mental health of one man is worth more than 2,000 pigs. And 2,000 pigs is pretty expensive. I've never tried to buy 2,000 pigs, but I bought a ham, and I know if a ham costs that much, 2,000 pigs cost a whole bunch. You've ever bought bacon or sausage or, you know, any of these, you know, pigs are pretty expensive critters. But one man's spiritual health is worth more than all 2,000 of those pigs were. Jesus knew it. Jesus sent those demons off into those pigs. So the pigs are in. It's no contest. But we need to realize that sometimes we think that our own discomfort is more important. I don't know. It made me uncomfortable to talk to that person, to be around that person. Our comfort is not worth nearly so much as a person's soul. Their spiritual well-being is worth far, far well, those 2,000 pigs were a small price to pay. Jesus said, what does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his soul? 2,000 pigs is nothing. But I'm sure those folks that kept those pigs thought it was something. They thought quite highly of those pigs, I think. But we need to remember that. The worth of one individual, one soul. God said, if we spent $1,000,000, and only converted one soul to be worth. Now we hope for a better rate of return than that. But even if we spent $1,000,000 and only ever converted one soul, that one soul would be worth that much. we hope that with $1 million we could convert a million souls. But we have to understand the great value of each individual. And as we look around us, every individual we see has a soul. And they are all just that important to the Lord. Each one of us worth more than 2,000. If you're here this morning, you have a need to respond to the invitation. Either to turn your life over to Christ by repenting of your sin, accepting Him as the Christ, being willing to put Him on your baptism and begin your new walk in life. Or if, as a Christian, you have not been living your life as you should. Maybe you haven't been going out and telling others what God has done for you. Maybe you need to stop. That today, if you're here and you have a need to respond to the invitation, we ask you to do so as we stand.